Welcome to My Pal Sammy. I'm your pal, Sammy Yunnan, and it's December 24, Christmas Eve. It's just after midnight. Santa should be coming soon. Hopefully I've made the good boy list. Probably will be skinning my teeth this year. It's going to be close. I might have to put out a couple more cookies, see if I can persuade the big man. So this is the first episode. Every Christmas break, I pensively watch and sit and absorb a lot of pop culture, books, comic books, TV shows, movies. And then I have tea and I think a lot and I write a lot. So this time I'm recording a handful of My Pal Sammy episodes. This is my captain's log, a record of some of the pop culture I've been consuming and some of the stuff I've been thinking about over my 2018 Christmas break. Tonight I've begun my avid loafing, sipping my tea. Tonight's selection is awake tea. Delicious. I've been watching Netflix and chilling, but of course not the way that the young kids Netflix and chill. There's no Christmas miracle happening here. And so let's begin. What I've been thinking about is how you can be popular or you can be relevant. It's so damn hard to be both. That's the sweet spot. Popularity is easy. We know that from boy bands and social media influencers, whatever that means. Relevancy gives your popularity, your influence, and more importantly, your work, it gives it its weight. Ultimately, quality is important. It's the only metric that determines greatness and longevity. All too often, with all the white noise, it's hard to know what we truly value in pop culture. It's surreal what we value or what's popular in our pop culture currently. I want a time machine just to see what the future archaeologists say about us, what they end up digging up, because that's why it all matters, the future creators. Pop culture isn't created in a void. It's 2018. There's not a lot of firsts left. I'm left-handed, so is there a left-handed superhero? Maybe Ned Flanders? So, okay, then there's a couple of firsts left. But generally, there's not. So, if you can create a work, a TV show, a movie, a book that influences and inspires generations, it gives you that rare ability to powerfully exist like a large rock in the rushing river of pop culture. You can push the river to change direction, or eventually to go through you. Want to make pop culture better? You make something that lasts. For now, here we are. Christmas Eve, shortly after midnight, and I have my awake tea, trying to figure all this out. Near the end of October, Adam Sandler is 100% Fresh was released on October 23, 2018 on Netflix. And that comedy special is exactly how Eddie Murphy could come back. That format, that style, that wordplay. Eddie, of course, would still get in trouble for using certain words. But, you know, those criticisms are meaningless and have no true value. If the material is rock solid, those criticisms are worthless, like dollar store jewelry. I thought about Eddie because 100% Fresh was Adam Sandler's return to stand-up after a long absence. It's now possible. The format is there. Next comes the material and the willingness to put in the work. Backed by popular demand, right? I started my Christmas break by watching Ellen DeGeneres Relatable, which sadly isn't relatable because it wasn't funny. She's had stronger material. In fact, she references her phone call to God. That's one of her best bits back in the day, almost like a remember when I was funny moment in Relatable. And that's the cautionary tale after returning to stand-up after 15 years later. Maybe Eddie can come back. Maybe popular demand is irrelevant. Do you go out with the work you've done, or do you come back and try and build on that? Steve Martin as a comedian splits the difference. He left on top and he never came back. I don't think he's ever coming back. As an aside, read Born Standing Up, a fresh-tastic book for anybody who slings creativity for a living. But that's a choice, right? You can be popular or you can be relevant. It's so hard to do and be both. On Amazon Prime, I saw the Coldplay documentary, A Head Full of Dreams, talk about being popular or being relevant. It's directed by Matt Whitecross, who most of y'all know directed the solid Oasis Supersonic documentary, which you have to kind of watch with subtitles. The Gallagher brothers got those thick accents. I can't follow everything they're saying, and then it's coupled with the British slang. It was a bit of work, that documentary. While the Oasis documentary is good, it's not documentary informative in a sense. You could say, what's the story, Morning Glory? I gotta find a way to put rim shots in this thing. It's more like a fun flashback. Remember when this happened? The Coldplay documentary, A Head Full of Dreams, is a bit more ambitious in scope. Actually, I don't know. I don't know if ambitious is the right word. It's trying hard to document their story and their struggle and where they're at. Coldplay's a hard band. I keep trying to break up with Coldplay. And every now and then, they'll release a song or two, and I'm like, all right, that's all right. Coldplay and I are always off and on. We're like that obnoxious couple that just annoys their circle of friends. Their last tour, A Head Full of Dreams, the tour that's covered in this documentary, I was offered free tickets at the Air Canada Centre, and I made this expression. I don't know. When you're hesitating, when you're making that I don't know sound with free tickets, it's never a good sign. That's the internal struggle, always deciding between, like, do I want to keep wearing pants for another 3 or 4 hours? Or do I want to go home and have tea and not wear pants? Those are exciting dynamic choices. #DownWithPants. Oh, I went to the show. It was free. And it was alright. I wasn't blown away like Jeff Bridges. And it's the same thing with this documentary. It's alright. I always felt the criticism Coldplay gets is accurate, while the criticism U2 gets is unfair. I don't think that's the right word either. Pop culture is not meant to be fair and never will be. I think the criticism U2 gets is mean. Yeah, mean. Mean is a better way to put it. Watching the Coldplay documentary, I think part of the reason why they get a lot of criticism, aside from their music, obviously, is that they almost didn't quite struggle. They formed a band, did a couple of acoustic shows in London, then Parachutes in Yellow, and all those acoustic feelings came out, and boom, off they went like a rocket, openly defying gravity. In your face, gravity. I get it. I know that struggle is different for every artist and every creator, and as you watch the documentary, it seems like Coldplay's been struggling more in later years, in recent times, and trying to navigate this persistent criticism. Struggles are puberty for creators, that ugly rite of passage. There will be similar experiences, some commonalities, but most of it is personal rather than universal. The other thing I watched similar to the Coldplay documentary was Springsteen on Broadway. After 236 performances, he released his Netflix special documenting his life and his work on December 16, 2018. It's fantastic. Holy chow. And there's this part in Springsteen on Broadway where he casually talks about being a bar band for 10 years. 10 years. I can't even imagine. Like, how do you maintain hope? How do you keep going? Like, why are you even still going? It almost doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying about Coldplay. Coldplay's narrative is like, we did a couple of shows and we put out Yellow. It was a monster hit and off we went. Look at me now, married to Gwyneth Paltrow. And they just keep rolling. Coldplay's hope wasn't about how to keep going in the face of setbacks. That was Bruce. Coldplay was about how do we keep going in the face of success. And I don't know if this is popular or relevant, but Coldplay issued A Head Full of Dreams, a look back in their early years. U2's recent concert tours celebrated their Irish childhoods. Justin Timberlake put out a book called Hide and Sight, about growing up in Memphis. And of course, Bruce Springsteen's Broadway show was all about his reckless youth in New Jersey, his origin story. There's some sort of trend where our popular artists look back at their lives and work and legacy in the last little while. It's one thing for us to grapple with the legacy and contribution of artists and creators, but when you're the one doing it, when you're the one making the albums and making the legacy, how do you even know what your legacy is? Can you understand it? It feels sometimes like, remember when we were in school and your teacher would be writing something on the board and it'd be a really simple word like the or ketchup or something. I don't know why somebody's writing ketchup. But It's like the teacher is just so close up to the board and just has this moment, this lapse, where they don't know how to spell the word, and it's such an easy word. I don't know if that makes sense. Lastly, I spend time with the Man of Tomorrow, aka Superman. I co-host Back Issue Bloodbath, Andrew Young, a comic book podcast on the Geek Hard Network. Plop Back Issue Bloodbath into iTunes or Spotify, all the places you listen to podcasts, and you'll have a good time. We have a lot of fun on that show. In episode 148 of Back Issue Bloodbath, we covered Brian Michael Bendis' Man of Steel. This was DC had recently hired Bendis to take over. He'd been at Marvel for I don't know how many years now. This was this big sea change in comic books, and he was writing Superman. That episode we did for Back Issue Bloodbath, episode 148, is one of those episodes where I felt like I didn't have a handle on what I was saying. Like that kid who rides a wobbly bike, he's still getting the hang of balance, and that sucker could tip either way. We're such a weird society. We'll punish celebrities for things they've said, but as anybody who avidly records podcasts can attest, what you didn't say will sometimes haunt you more. It's that whole thing in, like, basketball, whatever. We left it all on the court. No, I didn't really. Sometimes, like social media with podcasts, you just hit record, you lean into the mics, and then see what comes out. That's what I'm doing with this Christmas break podcast. But about Man of Steel, what Bendis has effectively done is update and basically equip Superman with a clear and compelling motivation. That's powerful. Superman is no longer just an established actor hitting his marks and going through the emotional motions. Think of any Robert De Niro movie from the last 20 years. That's how I view Superman. Superman and I recognize, I know he's not a real person, so just work with me here for a moment, but Superman and I recognize the glorious Dakota Ring days are long over. Superman must stand for something other than the traditional cliche of truth, justice, and the American way, lest he become a cliche. We've seen this with Captain America. He can't always stand for the American flag and give side-eye to, like, young kids who curse. His motivation and the tensions he encounters have constantly been addressed and revised and challenged. It's what makes the character so compelling. He gets a different why he gets out of bed and slings his shield. It's just revised. And that's what Bendis has done with Superman. He gave him a bold why he gets out of bed every morning. With the introduction of this new villain, Ra's al Ghul, who has now a connection and or a lie, depending on how you read it, to the death of Krypton, most certainly to the death of Kandor, and the destruction of the Fortress of Solitude. Ironically, those deaths have breathed new life into Superman and his stale motivations. Even Supergirl has benefited from Bendis' super work. She's off in space, attempting to prove if Zar is telling the truth or if he is a liar. Now see if he can make Superman relevant. Because you can be popular or you can be relevant. It's so damn hard to be both. And that's the end of the teapot. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MyPalSammy. And my writings are on MySummerLayer.com. Thank you. Thank you.